Hm? Ah! Oh.
You made me sick. You know that? Physically sick. Every time I look at you, every time I hear your voice, I want to throw up.
But remember that feeling. Because soon you will see it in her eyes when she looks at you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Rima.
And this is Legion Cast episode 19. This is our final episode for Legion season 2.
Boo.
It's been a good season.
It's been a really good season.
Yeah. We are going to be back for next season, right? We haven't really talked about it.
We haven't, but, you know, I'm here for it. I'll be watching regardless. Yeah,
absolutely. No, I want to keep podcasting about it. This, I think this is a good show for a podcast, obviously, because you can't tell what's going on half the time. So you need to talk about it.
Definitely have to talk about it. Yeah. And it's fun to talk about too.
Yeah. I mean, it is. Well, we don't know when it's coming back. They haven't announced. And I think there's even a chance that it might not, even though it's been renewed because of all this stuff with Fox. And I just read today that Comcast put in a last minute bid of $25 billion to try to steal Fox away from Disney.
Ugh.
And so, and Fox is the one who owns all the filming rights for X-Men stuff, and so who knows if some deal goes down and then Disney decides I don't want to have a show that has sexual assault in it, then take it off the air or something, you know, who knows. But hopefully, I mean, I'm pretty sure it will be back, but just in case, since we don't know when it's going to be back and it'll probably be at least a year, I thought we would let you guys know what else we're doing and how you can keep in touch with us. So what are you doing?
Well, I also, aside from this podcast, I have another podcast with co-host Sean that's also on Podcastica called Strange Indeed. Our main show is Stranger Things, but we have branched out and we have podcasted on Black Mirror, big favorite, at least season 4 of Black Mirror, Altered Carbon from Netflix, and we are currently covering Lost in Space.
That's awesome. Netflix. And have you figured out what you're going to do next?
No. Not I think yet. we're talking about it, but we don't have like
you
a concrete plan.
Announced it.
We have That's not exciting. Announced it. Yeah.
And you can find that by going to podcastica.com. I am doing Walking Dead cast right now. I don't recommend you listen to that because Fear the Walking Dead sucks. But it's almost over, and during the off season, that's kind of my home base podcast. So we'll talk about horror movies and whatever else. There's tons of great horror video games coming up, so we might talk about some of that. And I'm also doing Westworld. There's a couple more episodes of that, so you can find all that stuff at podcastica.com. I also wanted to let you guys know this is going to be a big long ad at the beginning of this podcast because it's the last one. We have a great Patreon group and Rima's in it, and it's filled with people who were podcast listeners and just, you know, wanted to get involved and help support me doing podcasting as a career. And the ones that do $10 a month end up in this Facebook group, and they've just really, really enjoyed being a part of the group. And I'm going to play a testimonial here. So you guys, I think it's like a minute and a half long or something. So here's a testimonial for this group. Oh, by the way, this was from a call that they were having about Avengers Infinity War. Mm-hmm. And the call just went on for like 4 hours and they started talking of other stuff, and this just came up and I heard it and I'm like, oh, I want to use this for a testimonial, and Rachel said I could, so here's Rachel.
No, I was like, well, thinking about the whole thing on the way home from Rochester last night, and like
Rochester,
my heart was so full of love, I like had to resist just like posting something about how much I love you all, because like we were talking about like what, like, the mystery of this group and how it's so great and, like, why it's so great and why we all – how we all got here. And it's just, like – I'm just, like, you know what? Jason started this thing out of, like, a like this passion for the show, and this comic, and it just has become this gift for all of us that we somehow like stumbled into unknowingly looking for an outlet or camaraderie or whatever, and it's become this wonderful thing where we've formed these like deep friendships, and I just don't think any like real explanation. It's just this blessing.
I agree.
Yeah, there's
it's amazing. Yeah, it's awesome.
It really is amazing. It's just such a gift. It really is. It's
so nice.
Everybody's so awesome in that group.
Yeah, it's cool. And so if you want to help support my podcasting and also just get, you know, have people to talk to about this geeky stuff, then it's a really cool thing to do. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/JasonandKaren, patreon.com/JasonandKaren if you're interested. All right, let's, without any further ado, get into this week's top five highlights for Legion Season 2, Episode 11, entitled Chapter 19. Man, this was disturbing, I thought.
It was. I'll say that this, watching this episode, like, while it was on and then after it was over, I really felt, like, physical pain. It wasn't just, like, emotional. I think I really felt that physically to my soul.
Yeah.
This one really shook me up.
I know. I think emotional pain actually is physical pain. We don't always realize it, but when you're sitting there like Jim and Carrie and Dumb and Dumber going, oh, that hurts.
Yeah,
and that's, yeah, I don't know if I felt that level of Jim Carrey pain, but yeah, you know, when it first started and David immediately starts floating across the desert to the tune of, what was it, the Who's
Behind Blue Eyes.
I was like, oh my god, this is so awesome, I love this show so much, and love, and then we get to the part where he like pretty much rapes her, and I'm like, oh fuck, man. And their relationship's falling apart through the whole thing. I mean, I don't want to get too much into the details here because this is just general impressions, but I'll say we knew this was going to be a tragedy. That's what Noah Hawley said. So we should have expected it. And I did. And I like it. I mean, after I watched it twice, I'm like, yeah, I'm glad the show has the courage to be an adult show. It's a little weird that it still has these whimsical moments and also this really dark, disturbing stuff. But I think all said and done, I liked the season finale. I'm glad it's not the series finale. That would totally blow, but I liked it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it too. There was a little, you know, there was disturbing things for sure, but it was presented, I think, in a, you know, in a good way, I guess, if you can even say that, but just lots of other good things that we got to see. So I enjoyed it. I think it wrapped it up. It kind of left us with that cliffhanger, but it kind of wraps up some things.
It's definitely like a turning point in the story, like a milestone in the story.
Definitely.
Well, what's your number five?
Well, my number five, you talked about it already a little bit there in the beginning where we have, you know, David floating, which was super cool. I love seeing that show of power, at least when it's not hurting someone. And then we saw Farouk doing it as well. They're both gliding, you know, just hovering over
and singing a duet
in a different manner where David's more singing and Farouk is more speaking the words of the song. I thought was, you know, kind of showed the differences between the two. And so I thought that was super cool.
And he's in Farsi.
Right. Yeah. And I thought he was switching languages again. Was he going back to French a little bit too? It seems like when he talks, he'll kind of go back and forth sometimes, but it was kind of hard to tell because the music was really loud.
But it was the same words of the song. He was singing the song just in another language. So it was totally a duet.
Right. It was very well done. And I loved, you know, showing them coming face to face for their battle. And then we got the battle itself with that wonderful imagery, kind of similar to what we had earlier in the season when they were like in those wrestling uniforms and one of them turns into a tank and they have this battle. I thought it was super cool how we got this like psychic battle that we got to envision what it's like, because these two mutants, that's their strengths, right, is their mental abilities and psychic powers. So, you know, you can't, if they didn't take that battle and let us see that imagery of them turning into these different things and battling each other, it's like it would look almost kind of silly, because then you'd have these two mutant superpowers just standing there staring at each other, grunting back and forth.
So, that would be awful.
Yeah, it would be awful.
I was thinking, I mean, it's like in the comics from what I remember, you see on the astral plane
like Charles Xavier has these fights a lot, mental fights with Shadow King, and he's in a wheelchair in real life, but and he's kind of an older man, but in the psychic plane he's big and buffed, and they shoot lightning bolts at each other. And this was even more imaginative because they're turning into all different kinds of objects. But it was cool. I thought if the show, I'm now that I know how low the viewership is, I'm thinking, man, the show, the budget must have gone down too. So they're doing really well with what they have. And I think this is a really fun, cool comic book style that didn't look too expensive, but it was still great. But I bet you if they had a higher budget, it would have been like CGI creatures or something. Who knows?
Yeah, it if they had a bigger budget, because they are working, I don't know what their budget is, but you know, they're working with a TV budget. TV isn't, unless you're Game of Thrones or something, isn't as high as you know, movies and such. So I think they do a really great job with their limitations.
Absolutely.
So,
I think they do.
They can take that visual and the music and the visual combined, that makes such a story and an impact, and really made it awesome. And like I said, you mentioned the song from The Who. I thought that was so perfect for that moment. And it was almost too perfect, because it's like Noah Hawley's had that song in his pocket the whole time.
Like,
and he's waiting for the moment.
And he's like, oh yeah, this is going to be what the show is. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was perfect. So that's my number five, just the beginning, which it usually is. The beginnings are always kind of mind-blowing to me, and I like how they start them off. So
yeah, it just lit me up right away when I saw that. You kind of go up behind David, and he's floating, and then he starts moving, gliding, and then he's singing a musical, and I'm like, this fucking show. And let's see, the words are, no one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man behind blue eyes. No one knows what it's like to be hated, to be fated, to telling only lies. It's all about kind of feeling like everyone sees you as the villain, and you're feeling victimized because of that. And so it's great for David and Shadow King to be singing a duet, because they both kind of have that. And after this episode, probably more than ever, I feel like David is closer to the Shadow King, where he's maybe mentally glossing over some of his transgressions and painting himself as a victim, where he should probably take more responsibility for himself. And I think the Shadow King's been doing that too. I don't even know if he's sincere when he's talking from a victim standpoint, but he's said similar things.
He has.
So this is a good song for that.
It is a really good song. Very perfect. I feel like he's had it in mind for a long time to use. And they always do a great job with music anyway.
One other cool thing about this battle, while we're on the subject, is David had a plan, and it totally panned out exactly the way he hoped it would, except for that last part where Sid comes and interrupts him beating Shadow King to death. It opens on this choker thing flying across, because we saw the Shadow King shoot it.
Farouk,
right?
Just kind of with a flick of his wrist was like boing,
and so it goes doing into the ground, and then we see, oh, the plan was for Lenny to shoot it so it would vibrate out these waves of taking away mutant power, apparently. Okay, fine, I accept all that.
And yes,
then it was cool, because that meant they were fighting man to man. Now I don't know if I was David, he's maybe doesn't have quite the stature as Farouk, that I would be so confident that you could win in a battle without powers, but that's what he thought, and he was right. He was winning. But conveniently, that also left him vulnerable to Sid. So it was just a nice plot device there, where because of his own plan, that left him vulnerable to her maybe shooting him. So anyway, I just like the way it all kind of elegantly fit together.
Yes, I agree. Good stuff.
All right. Well, I'll just go ahead and make that my number five, too. So what's your number four?
Oh, all right. So my number four is, and you kind of mentioned it already, is Sydney confronting David in the desert. This is where it kind of began to break me. I was riding on that high from the battle in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm kind of buzzing because it starts it
so
out.
So jerks
such,
you around.
I know. It's like playing with my emotions. I don't know where to go. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm excited, because I really love, you know, I'm a huge fan of the X-Men. So seeing the X-Men movies and you know, any of the mutants displaying their powers and stuff, you know, gives me a thrill. So I was riding this high from the beginning that we saw with the psychic battle. And then we get to the part where, yeah, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, watching David, you know, pound away on Farouk, and I'm like, oh man, he's gonna do it, because that's what Future Sid tells him that he's gonna do. He's like, you know, you gonna bash his brains in, you're gonna kill him. So I'm like, oh hell, this might actually happen, because you know, we never know what's real, what's not, and if something's gonna come to pass.
There's no fate exactly. But we make it.
So you think, oh shit, it's really happening, and here comes Sid. And I mean, what great performances too by Rachel Keller and Dan Stevens in this scene. It was so heartbreaking, you know, as she's talking to him. You know, she's carrying that damn Minotaur head, which I feel, you know, they kept throwing this Minotaur at us, and then all of a sudden, okay, now they've, you know, her and Carrie have beheaded him. And she's carrying around this Minotaur head in a macabre kind of way. So it's like, okay, he really didn't mean much to the story. That's okay. But, you know, she tells him that she wants to talk, and she goes on to, you know, kind of just, she's pointing this gun at David, and she's talking about, you know, women who marry serial killers and like have six kids. And she's like, you know what, they have to know, right? The wives deep down, at least a feeling something's wrong. I know with you now. And he tells her, well, I'm the good guy. He's the monster. She says, no, you're not that. And she tells him that you're the real villain. And I just thought that whole conversation between them, she did not want to believe it. You know, all of season one, all of season two, she has struggled with who David really is, and seeing it for herself as he's beating the hell out of Farouk, and he's got that look on his face again, that like maniacal face that he's getting off on, you know, inflicting pain on Farouk, and she sees it for herself. She's not just seeing what Melanie was showing her in the last episode. She's right, actually seeing for herself. And I think that made such an impact on her. It broke my heart, that whole interaction. Yeah. What'd you get out of that?
Yeah, I mean, she's gotten to the point, and I was thinking about how breakups can be sometimes where you're really in love with somebody, and then after a breakup, suddenly just there's some transgression or whatever, and your whole like feeling about the person changes, and you're just closed off, you know. And that's how she is. She's just like, nope, I don't want you anymore. And he's like, whoa, baby, I'm right here. But I don't know, looking at it, I think she's judging him based on the looks on his faces as he's doing things that she knew that he was going to do. Well, I don't know if she knew. No, I guess she didn't know that he was going to try to kill Farouk. But I really feel like a lot of her perception of him is influenced by Shadow King's manipulations. That if, you know, she knows what he has done to David, and that he's like the prime villain that Division 3 is going after and everything. And so I think she would have a little bit more understanding for David just passionately wanting to get revenge against this guy and put him out of existence. Maybe. I mean, who knows? I don't know. I just think that we have to question how much of it is her real perception and feeling versus how much she's been manipulated by the Shadow King. And, you know, a big part of me wondering that is because look how far gone Melanie was last week. That wasn't even her at all, you know? So I guess my point is that I don't want to just accept that, just based on her seeing the look on David's face when he's being violent, that she thinks he's a villain. Because the only person he's really being violent towards is the Shadow King, who's the devil, basically.
Well, and she's also basing it off of everything that Farouk / Melanie was showing her whenever he was in Division 3, just, you know, randomly taking people out, what he did to Oliver whenever he was torturing Oliver.
There is a good point that was Oliver's body, so
yes,
maybe he shouldn't have been so exuberant about it.
Right. But, I mean, he was operating under the assumption that he was still, like, possessed by Farouk. He didn't know anything about Melanie and what was happening over there with Melanie and Sydney as this was happening. That's all he's known since season two has began, is that the Shadow King has taken Lenny and Oliver again. So I'm not saying it's right what he did. He was clearly enjoying it. It shouldn't matter who the victim is. If you're getting off on torturing someone, there's a little bit of a problem there.
The thing is, that's, like, Noah Hawley would be happy that we're having this discussion, because I think the point is that it's all of this is arguable whether or not David is sane and whether or not he's good or bad is mm-hmm. something that is not easily pegged by most people, I would say. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we'll get more into it, but I think that's kind of the point that
right.
Noah Hawley wants us to feel like we're not sure what reality is and our footing is unsure. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're the crazy ones, you know, and he succeeds. Like, I mean, this show had me feeling a lot of different things about David, and partly wanting to stand up for him and partly wanting to feeling very judgmental and like, I want to condemn him. So I was feeling on both sides of that for sure.
I was back and forth, kind of feeling what a lot of the characters were feeling in this scene. As she's talking to David and telling him that he's the villain, he's the monster, you could tell she still loves him. But as she tells him, she's like, he's like, don't you trust me? And she's like, I trust myself more. So, it's,
I mean,
you know,
she was going to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah. She fired a bullet at his head. And that's because he had a certain look on his face when he was killing a villain. So she decides she's going to kill him. But since she doesn't have that look on her face, then it's okay. Even though it was her boyfriend. Like, I really do feel like Shadow King has gotten in and screwed with everybody's heads to the point where they don't even know what reality is anymore.
No, they were all infected with a delusion. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's still a point to where they're still infected to a point, or allowed that to somehow ingrate in their brain with the delusion that he has infected everyone with. And
I think so. We're not supposed to know that for sure, but one thing that really clues me in is everybody knows, I think, that Shadow King is a mass murderer and has done a lot of bad things, and yet at the end of this, he's free. And to me, that's like, okay, well, maybe I could understand that they might decide David is dangerous and has been not what he seems and needs to get therapy and medication, or else they're going to kill him. Okay, that's where they ended up. I could see that. But why does that mean that you have to let your number one villain go? You know, that part doesn't make sense.
Because they're all under his influence.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Yeah,
I hope so anyway, because God, it bothers me when bad people get away with stuff. And
well, and I saw arguments for both, that, you know, there was one, on one hand, it's like, well, yes, Farouk is the person that Division 3 has been hunting for so long, and he's been like public enemy number one. And so it makes sense to a point, because David is the worst of the two evils, that they make a temporary peace with Farouk, because, I mean, we do it all the time, right? I mean, as a nation, we make temporary peace for some end result that we need to make happen with people that we may not have as allies, but we make a temporary peace with someone. And I think that that's kind of what, on one hand, you could see it that way, or else on the other hand, like, I'm kind of, you know, I feel like I'm swaying more towards is that he's all powerful. He got that little halo thing that looked like a crown, which I thought was pretty fitting, since he considered himself a king, that Carrie had on his head was like a crown. And, you know, he was able to overcome that. And David was like, you know how powerful he is. He's in his body. You know how powerful he's going to be once he has his powers. So now that he's completely free, who's to say that not everyone is, you know, completely under his influence at that point?
Yeah. I mean, as far as the temporary peace things goes, I could maybe see that if they thought they had to do that for some benefit, but we saw that they were able to lure David into this room. And I'm like, as soon as Clark says, thanks for all your help, you saved us, my thought was, get out of there, dude, run away, something's not right here. Then you see them whispering to each other, it's like, it's a trap. But anyways, they got him in there without the Shadow King's help, right? And they trapped him, and that's what they needed to do. So I don't think they needed to let Shadow King go free for that.
Well, and why did they feel it was necessary if they weren't under his influence? Why in the world did they even need Farouk in the room to just kind of rub it in even more? Like, this is the guy
he seemed like he was in charge.
Yeah, so it's like, why would you even do that? If this is some type of intervention from people who care about you, intervention, trial, whatever you want to call it, for David, for people that care about you and they're trying to get through to him, why in the world would you bring in your worst enemy of a parasite that has taken hold of you and done all these horrible things for 30 years? Why would you do that? I mean, that just antagonizes the situation. And, and what makes you think that David's going to see any clearer? Because, I mean, you saw how it angered him. So what is the point of that? Why would you bring him to that point if you want to keep him calm and reason with him about your issues and why you're concerned for him?
Yeah, to me, it seems like either he's in control of everybody, and I almost think it would be more interesting if he wasn't able to get that level of control, that where they had him still in prison, but at least he was successful in turning them against David, because then you'd wonder how much of him turning them was him versus just what's actually been going on, because there is a lot of sketchy stuff with David. But the fact that he's large and in charge just makes me feel like it's a little bit more binary, that maybe he is manipulating them to an even larger degree. I don't know. I think it might be more interesting if he was still captured. But on the other hand, it was such a like knife twisting in the back moment when he's stuck there and the Shadow King strolls up. That was a good moment, even though it's hard for me to watch. It was like, oh shit.
Yes. I was like, as if it couldn't get bad enough. And then who comes walking down the damn hall?
The worst person you ever want to see. Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about how if I was David, and ever since I was a little kid, there was this demon inside me haunting me and causing problems in my life, that if I had a chance to kill this guy, I might have that same look on my face, you know? That's that's horrible. That's the worst thing I've ever heard. So my number four is David a bad guy or not? And one thing I really liked about this episode was when he's questioning whether he's a good person that deserves to be loved, or he says he is, when he's talking to the two other versions of himself that are the voices in his head. And then that delusion thing starts playing with David, John Hamm.
And chicken and the egg.
Yeah. And I think there was some other moments this season that seemed like people were having delusions, but I felt like all the other John Hamm moments were more clearly related to things in the show. And that delusion one, I always thought, oh, who's having delusions? I mean, I guess when everybody was trying to attack Fukuyama, they were having delusions that he was a creature inside. But still, anyway, I thought it was really a genius thing to introduce that concept so early, and then to have the delusion end up being maybe whether David is a good person and a hero and someone who deserves to be loved. That's like really heartbreaking, you know?
Yes.
Like, that's the delusion. Oh,
I know. That the whole thing with him and Sid, what his other aspects of his self was telling him, or at least one of them was, you know, that's a delusion. Whenever it showed the flashback from season one, when he saw Sydney and they fell in love, or what he tried, what they were telling him was that he thought it was love. It wasn't really love. He was trying to convince himself
that it was cracked.
Love. Yeah. And then telling and trying to make Sydney believe that they were in love.
Yeah. And the, usually you think of the delusions as being something scary, but in this case, it's something good and hopeful. And then coming up with rationalizations to, sort of bolster it is David telling himself he's a good person. And then you start to wonder, because he did that thing where he wiped her mind. And there is one sense where I feel like, okay, if you really believe that Shadow King is an evil villain who just totally manipulated her into hating you and it was all false, then maybe I could see wiping her mind if you have the ability to do that. But then, and maybe not, but I mean, if the alternative is just having her hate you, then maybe. But then what you want to do is talk to her about what happened. Tell her exactly what you just went through. You know, you were hating on me and saying all this stuff, and I erased it from your mind. I didn't know what else to do. What you don't do is pretend that never happened and try to have a good relationship, and then go into her room when she's expressed that she wants to spend the night alone and have some space, and kind of push yourself on her. Like that to me is the clearest episode of David Haller doing something really bad and super shitty. I mean, a sexual assault, I think.
I agree. And I feel like no matter what I'm going to say, it's going to somehow sound like I'm defending anything that he did. But I can almost see not the after part when he goes to her room, or, well, presents himself into her room as a projection. But the wiping of her memory, you know, it's he doesn't, I don't think, know what happened and transpired between her and Farouk or Melanie during that moment. But that's really almost seeing like he was kind of freeing her of that and freeing her of that. It's, I know he tried to rationalize it like, well, I was trying to make her remember that she loves me. That's what he was telling Farouk when he went and saw him and visited him and projected himself while this sex scene was happening. He's like, well, I was trying to make her remember that she loves me.
Creepy, by the way, that he was having that conversation with Farouk at the same time.
I know. Like, just weird. I mean, yeah. Only on this show, right? That this.
Yeah, I kind of love it, but it's sense. Like so wrong.
I know. Yeah. So I don't know. I could kind of see where he would want to wipe her memory because he feels like it's not right. Because he's looking at her when she's telling him all of this stuff. Because he's just completely stupefied. Like, what?
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't love me? And what are you saying? You know, I love you. You love me. Yeah. I'm your man.
And she's like, you killed all those people at Division 3. And he goes, well, that was when I was under the control of the Shadow King. And it totally reminds me of, you know, anytime you're arguing with someone that you're together with and it's a nasty argument, you're both rooted in your own reality. And that's because of that thing that we all want to see ourselves as the good guy. But sometimes mm-hmm. when two people have the opposite perception, then so, like for me personally, when I'm in those kind of arguments, then I question myself a little bit, like, oh shit, maybe I'm the bad guy. But you can't let that come through in the middle of the argument or you're gonna lose. No, I mean, you have to show some vulnerability sometimes. Anyway, I guess I could just say I kind of understand, like, and it made me question David too, like, is he just rationalizing and he doesn't realize it, or is he right? Like, I can understand some of his arguments, but also, well, here's one thing, that he did that mind wipe and it made me think of how he just implanted the plans in people's heads without mm-hmm. asking them first. And remember mm-hmm. we kind of talked about, well, that was a little bit bold of him to do. And after this, the mind wipe and then having sex with her, and then also in this episode when they were under the influence of the tuning fork thing, and they were kind of arguing, and he, I don't know if I'm reading this right, but he kind of moved his head forward and looked intently at her, and she said, it won't work. You know, your powers don't work. That made me wonder if he was trying to influence her there too. And that made me wonder, okay, well, maybe even subconsciously, because he's so powerful, it's possible that throughout their whole relationship, he's been psychically pushing her to do things that he wants because it's just a habit of his. And then maybe she wouldn't have even been in love with him, you know? I mean, I don't think so, but it's something to consider.
Oh, man, as if I wasn't bummed out enough. Right? You gotta go and throw that out at me. Holy crap. I can't. I see your point, and it's a valid point. But, man, I don't want to dwell on that because that would really throw me in a deep depression. That's why this episode was so hard for me, was to see that breakdown of that relationship of Sydney and David. I felt so much in that scene like David felt. Like, oh, my God, Sid, what are you thinking? You know, that you love him, and, mm-hmm. you know, let's work with him. And I don't know that he would have hurt her, like you said, when he kind of made that motion, like maybe his powers came back and he was trying to, you know, before he did the memory wipe. I would like to think that he would just like get that gun, like make that gun fly out of her hand or something, so she couldn't, you know, because she can't hurt him otherwise. He's way more powerful than her.
Mm-hmm. No, I almost thought it was just like a subconscious habit. Like, oh, I don't like the way Sid is looking at me. But then, you know, counterpoint to that, there has been times when they've argued or she's mm-hmm. been unhappy and he didn't do anything then. So mm-hmm. I could be barking up the wrong tree.
Well, and everybody is making him out to be so evil, like how the whole group during this trial and an intervention is against him. And they're like, and I don't see how it makes any sense that it has to be either death or drugged up. Like, you have to do therapy and be drugged up and be like, you know, zombie David, as he called it, or else death. It seems like that's really your only two possible solutions.
How about try just therapy for a while?
Yeah, and just keep him imprisoned. It seems like they have, at least if he's cooperative and they're able to see him, that, oh, yeah, maybe I do have a problem, at least get Farouk out of the room so he can think clearly and be calm, and so they can get through to him.
It really was the drugs that was the downer part of that, because it just reminded him of being back in Clockworks and being Zombie David, as he said, and he didn't want it, and being shunted away. And that's the genius of the show, and what I love is that even though it's a superhero show, it really is about mental illness, and it makes us feel crazy, and it reminds me anyway of uncomfortable psychological things. And that's a brave thing to do for a superhero show. So I kind of love it for that, even though it's uncomfortable sometimes. But anyways, yeah, I think you're right that they could have just said to David, instead of suggesting that they were going to dope him up, which is kind of scary and shitty, that they could have just suggested therapy, maybe. I don't know.
Like, it, you know, work with us and stick to some counseling, some therapy, some high therapy. It's like, why does it have to be this one way? I mean, that's, again, along with Farouk being in the room and just making him, because Farouk barely has to speak. Just his presence alone is enough to make David erratic. But then when you start talking about dragging him up again, which we know he, like you said, just reminds him of being in Clockworks and being a zombie, that just makes him more aggressive too. It's like, you know, that's not how you get someone to, you know, kind of cooperate and make them see. And I don't think David recognizes, I think Sydney was right that, you know, yes, you do have superpowers. You were infected by this parasite for all of your life, but that wasn't just it. You are mentally ill.
Yeah.
And I don't think David saw that. I think even though he's talking to these other aspects of himself, he's been having conversations with himself all season. And now we actually get to see them visualized and in person when he's in his childhood basement as he's having these conversations. And then they pop up again there at the end. He doesn't seem to question that. Like, well, of course I'm having conversations with myself, but I'm not crazy. You know?
Well, yeah. And you wonder how much of that was brought on by the Shadow King and how much of it was just there and maybe irritated by the Shadow King. But David has a conception of himself as a hero and a good guy. And he mentioned, you know, oh, I thought he's clinging to his story that they thought I was schizophrenic, but actually it's because of the Shadow King and my powers. And then Sid found me and I realized that I'm special and I'm a mutant and I'm a hero and I'm a good guy. And really Sid is the anchor of that. And so by Sid separating and then her saying what you just said about, you know, you're actually mentally ill, that's dangerous. It's stupid because he has a conception of himself as a good person. And I think that they should actually, not for the drama of the show, but just in real life, if this happened, they should not try to rip that identity away from him, because when he's identifying as a hero and a good person, that's something to work with. It's a resource he can draw on. And then they can examine the areas where he's not living up to that he thinks he might be, which I think there are several. But at least, like, now at the end of this episode, he's kind of divorced himself with that identity. He's like more comfortable hanging out with Lenny again, like he used to, who doesn't have a very good impression of herself. Am I a good person? And like questionable morals. Like, I think he's decided, okay, maybe I'm not a good person. And that's where he has been earlier in the series. Like, this episode kind of reminded me more of season one, 'cause he's just so frazzled and fragile. But the difference is that now he has a much higher command of his powers, so he's more dangerous. So now he's back to being in this moral gray area, but much more dangerous. So that should make for an interesting season three.
I absolutely believe so. I think where they're headed and where they're flipping the story is going to be a great season three. And I can't help that. That's why I really believe so much about, you know, the group, and I could be completely wrong and I'm okay with that because I don't know anything more than anyone else, just my own speculation about the whole group being under Farouk's influence there at the end, because they didn't approach it in the way that you just mentioned. And it's like they're pushing so hard at him and focusing on him,
like
being
like they're
the
trying
villain.
To break him
if almost. You keep telling someone that they're going to be or that they're a villain, they're gonna be a villain. And I feel like they keep, you know, you're not good, David. You're not. You're mentally ill. Right. You're not a good person. You don't deserve love.
Yeah.
Your love was a delusion. Well, right, and then exactly. He lives up to that. So you know, he just did exactly. That's why he's like, okay, enough.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that's why I think there was a better way to go about it.
Yeah. And I think that if everybody took a close look at David as his friends and his lover, they might see, you know what, there are some areas where he needs some help and he's super powerful. So this, if we don't address this, it could be dangerous for everyone. Let's do it in a loving, caring way. Maybe that's how that could play out. But because of the Shadow King's influence, I think that they're doing it in a very toxic way that's just blowing everything up. And the Shadow King has his big smile on his face the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I don't know where we are. We probably just went through all our points right there.
We probably went through all of our points. Yeah, we're not going to have anything left to talk about. But let me see. On my number three.
Wait. Let me make sure I finished all of them. I was saying, is David a bad guy or a good guy?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to reinforce one more time. When Sid said, David, you drugged me and had sex with me, it was interesting that she chose that phrasing, you drugged me, because he didn't drug her. He wiped her mind. But I guess you could say there's similarity to that. Like, just put her in a state where she wasn't herself and couldn't make decisions for herself. But
she
either
seemed
way,
a little incapacitated.
Yeah.
When they got back to Division 3, she looked kind of out of it.
I mean, I'm not trying to excuse it. I'm just saying it was weird. But
yeah,
I'm totally not trying to excuse it, because I do agree. Like, that was a powerful line. And I think the show chose a really, really dark thing to, because that's really what made me question David as whether he's a good person or not. Like, I've always wanted to be on David's side so much, but that, what he did there was the thing the most in this whole series that made me go, oh dude, you totally fucked up. I can't support you in that. You know, it's just not good. And it was really disturbing. And I almost wonder, was that a good idea to put that in the show? But the effect it had was probably to make me do what Noah Hawley wants us to do, which is to be right there alongside everybody else thinking maybe David's a villain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all. I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Good stuff. I like it. Well, my number three, it's kind of short and sweet, was that little bit that we got with Melanie and Oliver. Really, yeah. Really liked that. So sweet. I really enjoy it, because it seemed like for the very first time, not only did we get them like together, they knew who each other were, because last time they were together, like, Oliver had no clue who Melanie was. And it was, you know, adorably goofy, his reaction to her, as sad on her end, from the end of season one, whenever he came back. So I really liked that we got them together and they were under no one's influence or manipulation. And it was truly
adoring
Oliver.
Each other.
Yeah, how they really were and how I have been waiting for them to be, because I really was rooting for them all of season one, for Oliver to come back. And then when he did and he didn't remember her, I was like, oh my gosh, how awful for her that he's there. He's finally back. And then he doesn't even remember who she is. How heartbreaking for her. And then as soon as she gets him back, boom, he's gone again this whole entire season. So I was really rooting for them, and it just made my heart happy. Like I said, I was riding on all of these highs with the psychic battle, had some Melanie and Oliver, because we just did not get... We had some good stuff with Jemaine Clement this season. We had some really great performances, but I feel like we still got a little... you know, we didn't get enough, in my opinion. Yeah. I would have liked to have had a little bit more. And certainly Jean Smart, she had that really a couple great episodes and, you know, some scenes and stuff that was great. So I really loved having those two together, and they had some really cute lines and just seeing their interaction in their nice homey little ice cube.
Yeah, that one interview, are you going to read that part from Noah
Hawley?
No,
Hawley? No.
He said something about how this season they filmed a lot more stuff, or at least some more with them, but it got cut because he wanted to keep things concise. So
yes.
I was like, oh, well, put it on the DVDs or something. I want to see that.
Yeah. Roll the extras, because I'm interested in seeing some of that stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
So that's my number three.
I like that too. They were in the same ice world that he was in before, and it was the same effect. They couldn't remember anything. We've been here how long? Soup? No, not soup. We've been here longer than that. So it was
so
funny.
Cute.
And yeah, they're all lovey-dovey and they're making each other feasts and they don't age and he's reciting poetry, and that was really sweet. But I don't know for sure if I agree with you that they're not under anyone's influence, because a second time through watching this, I noticed Let's see. They're saying what happened to Sydney was so sad. She was betrayed. David turned after the fight with Farouk. And then I loved when Oliver says, "Oh, very soothing voice, I found. Very hypnotic." Because that's what we say too. But yes. Then I think that's important because they're kind of spacing out and they're like, "You know, I remember helping him." And she's all, "Yeah, I do too." And so I think maybe they're there because of him, that they're not there by their own choice, because they don't remember what the hell happened with him. And their memories aren't very good. And it does seem a little mm-hmm. odd that they would be there. So I think it's possible that they're there because of him.
I mean, we don't know how and why, but they know that their bodies are hidden, so they're safe. They can't tell where the bodies are at, so nothing happens to them in case they ever do decide to come back. But it seems like that's the one place where they can be happy, because like you said, they don't age there in the astral plane.
Yeah, that was what I thought the first time through. And then the second time when I noticed that they were kind of spacey on Shadow King and they remembered helping him, I'm like, why did they put that dialogue in there?
Mm-hmm.
What would
I don't
be the
know.
Reason for that?
But I thought it kind of explained itself, because we know Oliver spending like 20 years in the astral plane and he just like completely lost his memories and,
yeah,
and couldn't remember
I think
Melanie
we're,
and stuff. So it, I feel
that's
like
that's what
made
we're
sense.
Supposed to know when we go in. We have all that background. So mm-hmm. we're supposed to think, oh, yeah, this kind of makes sense. It's a little weird. But then maybe the twist comes when they start talking about the Shadow King, that, oh, shit, maybe actually it wasn't what I thought. And they're actually there because they got manipulated into being there. I could be wrong. I also
maybe,
think
oh,
that
I could be wrong too.
Maybe this is their happily ever after, and that we might not see these actors on the show anymore since they didn't have a lot to do this season.
I was getting ready to ask you that very same thing. That's what I was wondering as well, is if this is kind of like our little goodbye to Melanie and Oliver, that they're just going to live, like you said, happily ever after, you know, forever happy in the astral plane. And that's our little goodbye for season three.
I would rather not. I want as much more Jermaine Clement as we can get.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope not. I hope it's the Shadow King manipulating him in there.
I mean, I would hope so too. I certainly don't want it to be, but it made me think about it, because it just seemed like it seemed like a little send off. Like, oh, they're happy. They're in their happy place. They're in a good place, and they're finally together. Like everyone, at least me, was rooting for. And now we can leave them there and move on with the story. And just know, maybe they'll be mentioned from time to time by the characters, you know, Melanie and Oliver, you know, something like that. But as far as seeing them on screen or something, that might be the end of things. And I hate
their
that.
Their bodies in these like undersea suits. Maybe they're in some closet somewhere that we see every once in a while or something.
Right. Somebody or, glances by wistfully.
Yeah, frozen on ice. And then they can, at the end, they can burn the bodies and release them into the cosmos like Oliver was talking about before.
Yeah, then they can just dance along the astral plane forever and be free. It's beautiful,
baby.
That
right
it's
after
groovy.
This podcast.
Yeah, let's do it.
My number, what?
Three.
Three is how much of this is because of Farouk making everyone crazy, which we've talked a lot about already, but a couple other things that we didn't mention is they did this title thing, chapter 12, The Trial of the Shadow King. It goes, "In the end, what is the sound of truth? Waves on a beach, the laugh of a child, or perhaps there are competing truths, the truth of the mind, the truth of the heart. If all the apples are bruised, then it is the unbruised apple that is bad." Which I don't agree with. If all the apples are bruised, then and there's one unbruised apple, then that's the one good apple. But I kind of get what they're going for. "The sane man who's crazy. For what is normal is that upon which nine wise men can agree, leaving the tenth to swing from a hangman's rope." So that suggests that at least they want us to be thinking that maybe David is the one sane person and everybody else is insane. Wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Yeah. Why else would you want to put that in there? Another thing about Farouk, because this is, I mean, if that's really what's happening, it's because Farouk is making it happen. And it's interesting to me that David in future Sid's timeline killed Farouk in the desert and then apparently destroyed the world. Well, that's an important point there. If what we're arguing is whether David is a good person or not. I mean, in this timeline, Farouk knew about that. So then he engineered this plan so mm-hmm. that Sydney would come and stop David from killing Farouk. And now Farouk lives. So David did not kill him in the desert. And maybe because of that, he won't destroy the world. So if he's has the potential to destroy the world for real, then I'd say that's kind of an important factor to consider when you're considering whether he's a good guy or not.
He's fragile.
That's the thing about Legion that's so great and horrible, is he's so powerful and yet so fragile psychologically.
Mm-hmm. He is very sensitive. He's very powerful with his powers and his mind, but he is very sensitive. I mean, he was completely broken, you know, when Sydney was turning on him. And then again, during the end, during mm-hmm. that intervention.
And in season one, a lot of the time too, he was just all fucked up.
He was.
Okay. What's your two?
Yeah, number two. So my number two is David's inner reflections. And it's basically some of the conversation, which we've covered a lot of whenever he's having his conversations with his other aspects of his mind in the basement. I noticed that he acknowledged his Omega mutant status. Have we heard them say that before? We've heard him mm-hmm. talk about being a powerful mutant. I don't know that we've ever heard it referenced. If it has, then it was kind of lost on me somewhere. But I thought that was kind of interesting how he acknowledged himself as
what
Omega Mutant. Omega Mutant. Mm-hmm. It's like the most powerful mm-hmm. Alpha Omega, you know. So
yeah, Jean Grey is another example of
she's an Omega level. Mutant. Right. So totally makes sense. I just thought it was kind of interesting that he like acknowledged himself and he just kind of, you know, just like, oh, and just, you know, Omega Mutant and all, you know, just kind of right. just whatever.
He's seeing himself as a god, I think. And when
a part of him is
part of him, exactly. And I liked that scene when he was captured under that dome and trying to get free, and then when he did break free, which I thought was super cool that they thought they could hold him but they couldn't, and then he lights up in this bright angelic light and his body, it goes kind of arches back, and it really did look like some kind of a spiritual thing mm-hmm. or something.
It did look godlike
mm-hmm.
for sure. Very good moment. So I like, we talked a lot about that already. One aspect of his mind was trying to tell David his love for Sydney is a delusion. David convinced, I think in a way that, you know, David gets out of Clockworks and he's not taking meds anymore because he meets Sydney, gets out of Clockworks, and he's convinced that Sydney saved him and that their love is like now what keeps him sane to a certain right. degree. Versus like needing that medication or therapy, and that Sydney made him good and would save him.
I think that's what Noah Hawley said in that article, that she's like his medication now.
Yeah. So I just like that whole scene. I like how we get that, you know, back to like season one where we see that whole, his bedroom or basement, whatever that he was in. And we finally get to see the actual physical form of the voices that he's been talking to all season, because we kept hearing it and we realized it wasn't like season one, whenever it was the British voice that he had, that he was talking to himself, his refined. British side, his reasonable side. And but we had these other two, so we actually got to see them and kind of be like, oh, okay, we weren't just making that up. He is talking to to himself.
You heard little whispers of it, and like in season one you just heard like, and then in season two you heard, well, you should do this, no, you should do that, but you could hear that it was Dan Stevens' voice. But I wonder if this is that this is how they are hewing closer to the comics, where Legion is called Legion because he has a legion of personalities inside him, that they're all going to look like Dan Stevens, or next season will he have him bring in other people and have, I don't know.
Right, like they're not really his personalities, but they're disguising themselves as him. Like, this is a part of you, but it's not really... Like, the personalities are a part of him, but they're not really him.
They came from somebody else.
Exactly, but they have his face and his voice. So I totally agree with that. I think that's where they were leading off, not just with the show of powers that he had there at the end, but again, with the you know, not only were we hearing those voices, but now we actually get to see them and he's interacting with them.
And I like when he's trying to tell people that he's sane, and then one of them says something, and he goes, "Shut up!" And it's like, that doesn't really help your
case.
But
I'm perfectly sane. I'm not crazy.
I was trying to pay attention to their personalities a little bit, as I think you were too. And I think they were fairly distinct. I think one was trying to pump him up, like, mm-hmm. this world owes you everything because of what you've been through. And the other one is like, you're delusional and you're sick. And so one's putting him down, one's building him up. There are a couple different ways I was looking at that, that I've always thought of the way to handle problems is to try and be grounded, but open. But you can go on either side of that. It's a less healthy way. If you're on one side, you're shrinking away from things. You're kind of hiding out or withdrawing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's represented by the personality that's like, you're sick, you're delusional, you know, you're nothing. And then the other side of that is posturing, where guys just like, what, you want to fuck with me? Like being a badass. And, you know, that's the other guy. Like, you're a god. You don't owe these people anything. Both mm-hmm. of those, posturing and withdrawing, are still forms of being closed off to what's actually happening. That if you're really like integrated and healthy, then you can be strong, but still be present, I guess. I don't know if right. that makes any sense. The other thing,
it does
thing,
make sense.
Awesome. The other one, and I don't know if this totally fits, but it's kind of irresistible to talk about because it's all about psychology, is maybe one's more id and one's like super ego, where id is just like, I want to be satisfied, compulsive, you know, I want to be gratified, and animalistic. And then super ego is more like your conscious, your self-consciousness and stuff like that. I don't know, mm-hmm. maybe. But I'd like to see a bunch more personalities end up in there eventually. I always say that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm totally down for that because, you know, if that is where they're headed, you know, he has a lot of personalities in the comics. So it would be interesting if they do explore more.
Yeah. And very distinct ones. Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. he's having a psychotic break there at the end. He was definitely having a psychotic break. And that was something that happened. It wasn't the same event, this type of event. It didn't happen that way in the comics, but it was a psychotic break, I believe, that caused him, you know, for all of these personalities to become like relevant and present in his life.
I think they were absorbed into him in the comic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
During a terrorist
attack on his father. He lost his father, or his, sorry, adopted father, lost his adopted father in that terrorist attack. And due to that, had absorbed all of the people that had died, their personalities in that attack. So I think that's where we're headed.
So I realize that I've gone through all my points. So it's up to you. I have some notes.
Because my number one is the end game. And we've talked a lot about the trial or the intervention, however you would like to refer to it, or all the folks out there listening want to refer to it, and what happens during that.
Mutant intervention, yeah.
Mutant intervention. I like that. But yeah, we've talked a lot about it, how these are supposed to be people that care about you, and they totally went around about it in the wrong way. They didn't do it in a loving way, a nurturing way, a healthy way, and that's why I do firmly believe, and I'll probably be proven wrong, and that's okay. I can accept it because Legion, I'm very forgiving. Tell me I'm wrong. I can do it. Trying to figure out some other points that
you do firmly believe that what?
That Farouk is, all under Farouk's control. Mm-hmm. And it made me question, like, if they turned him in the monster that they were trying to prevent, you know, how far back does this go? We got confirmation, which Carrie speculated, male Carrie speculated on it, on that orb that David was trapped in for a year during, between season one and season two. That he's like, I think I made this. I feel like I'm familiar with it.
Well, that's what Vermillion says. Yeah.
Right. So they've confirmed that he made it. So how far back could this have went that somehow Farouk could have possibly influenced everything that's just happened? That he influenced Carrie to make this orb and trap David and have future Sid present herself.
I don't necessarily think that's what they were saying. I just think that they were talking about how future Sid said that David destroyed the world, and that prompted male Carrie to make this orb to go back and get David from the past.
Right. I don't think they said it in this episode. It's just something I'm speculating about, like how far back this manipulation goes, and how and did, because we don't really, I don't think at this point really thought Farouk had anything to do with this, but something had to facilitate David being trapped in this orb, and Carrie
it was future Sid wanting to try and go back and prevent him from destroying the world.
But then where did it go from before that point?
What?
How did she get to that point?
Because David destroyed the world.
Okay. So, and then I thought what was interesting out of that scene, talking about my belief that everyone is under Farouk's control, is in this scene, David's wearing white. Everyone else is wearing black. And, you know, they were talking about...
I'm wearing
just
black.
Before what that, I'm wearing black. I'm always wearing black. What are you talking about? It's dark and twisty like me. Black like my soul is what I always say. So you mentioned earlier about all the bruised apples and the one unbruised apple being the bad one. They were also talking about, like, they brought up the delusion and the egg and all of that whenever we saw David talking in the basement. But what didn't get brought up was one of the other stories that we got with John Hamm about mass panic. And that's why I feel like that whole room was mass panic. Like there was this panic about David being a bad guy.
He did say it. David said it. He said, I think this is mass hysteria at one point, but it was real quick.
Yes. So, you know, I picked up on that. And then we get where there's talk about the 10th man getting hung because the other nine are in agreement, but the 10th man's not. So he's the one that gets hung. And I feel like that's, you know, David's that 10th man.
Yeah.
So I don't know, just the color and just how just something always seemed just a little bit off, just didn't sit right with me. So those were the only other outstanding things that we hadn't covered yet.
I mean, I think that Sid is probably right that when she says it's both, that David did at least have a propensity for mental illness, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's possible anyway. And that the Shadow King exacerbated it. So that, you know, that's why this show is interesting, that it's not just one thing or the other. But if just things could have been handled better, then it wouldn't blow up like this. But the Shadow King's influence is really what makes it all the worst possible outcome.
Well, they're making, you know, and like I said, I don't want to rationalize or make it sound forgivable what he did, but, you know, they keep talking about how awful he is and he kills people and he's the world killer. When he, he's like, fine, if I'm all of these things, then just let me leave. I'll just go. I'll go away and I'll disappear and you'll never hear from me. And they're like, nope, it's either termination or you're going to have to be drugged up and have therapy. Mm-hmm. And there were no options. And to me, that just isn't how you reason with someone, is to be so closed off and that these are the only options that can be on the table. And when he did break out of that force field that they had him under, which was so super cool, badass, by the way.
Yeah.
So loved that whole thing. He didn't hurt anyone on his way out. He wasn't killing people. He didn't hurt anyone in the room.
Exploded all their heads.
Exactly. He could have, you know, and even if he didn't kill anyone, he didn't, like, you know, with a swipe of his hand, knock him out to prevent him from leaving. He teleported out, went and got Lenny, and he's like, hey, I'm such a bad guy, let's go do bad things together, you know, and let's go.
She's like, all
right. Yeah, well, what about Blondie? And he just left. He didn't hurt anyone. So it's like, is he as bad as what people are making him out to be? Because he didn't take anyone out on his way out. He wanted to get out of there because they left him with, to me, almost no options. To me, the being drugged up in therapy or death are not options.
Right. You're saying all that, and I agree, except I also think that, well, if things go particularly bad for David, he's so fragile that he might end up destroying the world, right?
Maybe.
It could
happen.
Maybe
in season three he does.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, was
so
that what...
Just the fact that that's a possibility means that I do think that Division 3 would be smart to try and mitigate that or contain it somehow. I just don't think the way they went about it was very good, but... They we're saying the same thing, that they just weren't, they could have offered him some better options.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, let's see. I got a few notes. I love that Carrie was so stoked to having fought the Minotaur and kept bringing it up. And do you know, the blood, it smells like those bullion cubes that we had as a kids, but it didn't taste like that. I'm like, oh, that went dark real fast. Like, what were you doing? Did some blood get in your mouth, or were you just like, arr!
looked like that blood got everywhere, because Sydney told David, he's like, are you okay? You've got a lot of blood there on your neck. And she's like, it's not mine.
So. Well, she had the head in her hand, right? Mm-hmm. Let's see. Predictions for next season. I don't think I need to do any predictions, but they've left it in a cool place. Noah Hawley calls it season three, the third act. So I feel like I even said he's had a structure in mind for this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And do you think he'll wrap it up next season?
I don't know what he'll, I don't know what he has in mind. I haven't seen that far ahead. I would like to see it go maybe to four.
Yeah. At this point, I just want Noah Hawley to be able to do whatever he thinks would be best for his story. And if that's three and four would just be like, stretch it out, then I would rather he not do that. But if he has a good story for four, then yeah, absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Because I have total faith in Noah Hawley. I feel like this man can do no wrong. To me, he walks on water. I love him so much right now. I'm obsessed with him because I'm also watching Fargo. Yeah. So I'm watching Fargo. I'm watching Legion. It's really I'm on good, a,
yeah.
Yeah, it's so
maybe we should do so Fargo on this podcast. We can just keep it going.
Yeah,
oh, there's just, an idea.
It's an idea. And it's so weird to see because Rachel Keller, who plays Sydney, is in, well, I know you've seen Fargo, but for folks that may have not, she's in season two of Fargo. So watching season two right now and seeing her character in that
so
show
different.
And then seeing the show, it's very different. It's kind of weird messing with me, but
I saw that
so,
first.
So, good.
So then I'm like, oh, she's a good girl now when we got to Legion. Yeah, if you guys, I'm not saying we will do this, but I'm just curious if you want us to cover Fargo, let me know. I'm curious to know if you guys want that.
Yeah, it's so good. I hate that I waited so long. I knew it was a good show. It's always that there's not enough time in the day to add another darn show.
Yeah.
And I finally, you know, with Legion being so in love with Noah Hawley and his writing skill and what he does creatively, that I'm like, I've got to watch Fargo. So it turned me onto that. And now I'm just on this Noah Hawley high, that if he is feeling good about whatever story, wherever, however far he feels that this can go, season three, season four, as long as he's feeling good about it, I'm on board.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Okay. Do you have any other notes or anything?
I think we covered most of my notes. I did think it was interesting when David, when they're out in the desert, he's wiped Sid out and Lenny was captured by Division 3. He hops in the back and he tells her, because she's like, oh, it's an electric chair for me. And he's like, no. He goes, I think God has plans for you. And
is he talking about himself?
Talking about himself. I was wondering what you thought about that, if you thought that was in reference to himself.
I thought it was very provocative and meant to make us ask that question. I don't know the answer.
I don't know either. I just thought it was kind of interesting because then he has his, as he's having conversations, because he hasn't had the conversations yet with himself, or wait, maybe he did, because that was after the shots were fired, Sydney missed, and they were kind of blown back or whatever from, and that's when he was having those conversations with himself. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you're a god, you're a god. So I thought
he could do a podcast just by himself, and there would be three hosts at least.
Mm-hmm.
And one would be a total negative person.
Right. That's
just
all
like
the
ours.
Notes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
All the notes I have. That's it. We covered a lot.
We'll take a little psychotic break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Bye.
All right, we're back. It's time for the news.
A couple items this week, kind of long. Hopefully this won't be too long, but I thought, you know what, it's the finale, so it's appropriate. First item that we have is from Entertainment Weekly. This was taken from an interview with Noah Hawley. If you don't know who he is by now, turn off this podcast right now. So first question, the season finale ends with David emerging as this villain. Has that always been the plan with this character? Holly says, yeah, for me, I always had this question in my mind. What would happen if Walter White was a supervillain? That Breaking Bad superhero show. This idea, especially in the X-Men universe, that the moral line between good and evil is often fudgeable. Magneto, who sometimes is their villain and sometimes is on their side, and the idea of what the right thing to do is, can shift depending on the circumstances. So I wanted to evolve the show so that you realize over time that maybe David's not the hero of your show, but maybe Sid is the hero of your show. Once you see that,
I'm not liking Sid so much right now.
It's a little difficult, but it's
but
it's kind of both
that
sides.
Breaking Bad superhero, I like that.
Yeah, I think he brought that up again. He says once you see that, it becomes a different show on some level. You'll watch it with different eyes at that point, which doesn't mean that David can't come back or that in the end he doesn't find his way back. But on some level, the whole show is a mental illness parable. The idea that David tried to kill himself and he went into the hospital and they straightened him out and they gave him his meds and they let him out and took his meds for a while. Then he decided he didn't need them. And then when he went off of them and now he's in the psychotic break, except he replaced the words meds with love. He realized he had this love story and love was making him a better person, a saner, more stable person. Yep. And then he started lying to the woman that he loved and not being consistent. When he turned his back on the love story, everything started to fall apart for him.
Right. So what's the lesson here? Be a better liar. Just kidding. Ha ha.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I've noticed, I've mentioned it on the podcast that this season was kind of weird because David seemed really stable for a lot of it. And it was kind of relaxing for me to watch him after all that upset last season feel really in charge and kind of steady. And you still heard the voices, but it was sort of in the background and he had a command of things. And then it all fell apart at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Sid, yeah, that really did it. And yeah, you're right. I mean, he shouldn't have been lying and hiding things and stuff.
It didn't help the situation and her feelings of trust.
Yeah.
And lack of trust that she had for him there and then, for sure.
He doesn't know how to engender trust at all.
Mm-mm. Next question was, you mentioned that maybe Sid is the real hero of Legion. Do you see this next phase of the story focusing more on Sid? Noah Holly says, yeah, on the level that it's their story, I think she should always be front and center. And I think we went a long way this year towards expanding your understanding of her. We had that fourth hour where we saw her childhood from many different angles and how she became the person that she is. And the fact that she's not a pushover by any means. And she's someone who's learned to embrace the ugliest parts of herself as her strength and not her weaknesses. To the degree that all of the X-Men franchise is a metaphor about being an outsider, you're a mutant, but we've seen it as a metaphor for many different kinds of exclusion. A lot of the time with these characters, the powers that they have are directly connected to the way they don't fit into society, and it's a way to redefine their weaknesses as their strength. And mm-hmm. I think that's what makes it exciting and relatable to the audience.
Yeah, this is a perfect show for him. I love the way he ties all this supernatural stuff into real life. And the ways we really feel about things and stuff. But one thing I just thought of is he's comparing it to Walter White in Breaking Bad. So that makes me think that maybe David's just going to be more and more of a bad guy as the series goes on, which is a little heartbreaking, but
right. I don't know if that's what he's alluding to, because we definitely saw that evolution for anyone. Oh, I don't know if I want to say that or not, but we definitely
know what Breaking Bad is about.
Yeah. So
good guy turns into a bad guy.
Yep. Just gets worse. So they say the David we see at the very end is much closer to the Legion we know in the comics with all the split personalities. Since you're now two full seasons into the story, has your relationship to the comic books changed at all in terms of what you do and do not include from the page? He says, yeah, the character in the comics, there was a complexity to his origin story and the powers and the way that they work that seemed a hard ask of the audience to say, well, you have these multiple personalities and each one has its own powers. We're seeing the birth of this character that we may know from their comics. And so the idea that organically we got to a place where we had a moment last year where a rational British version of David popped out to help him out in a scenario. And this year we end up with three Davids all arguing different points of view. That may increase in season three. And of course, if so, creating different versions with different voices. So I want to see if I can put them through phases, I suppose.
Cool.
that's good to know. Yeah. Next question was, after hunting the Shadow King all season long, he pops in at David's trial nonchalantly and nobody seems to be freaked out by him anymore. Do you see him as being an ally now in the sense that Division 3, even though they were enemies, now are sort of allies? He says, I think it's really interesting what I'm attempting here, which is this idea that a lot of time in these comic book stories, you have a takeaway where you feel like might makes right, and the only solution to a problem is war. And I think what I'm playing around with is the idea that there's really no such thing, that in real life you can fight your enemies, but ultimately you have to make peace with them. And it may be an uneasy peace, and it may not be a lasting peace. At a certain moment, if you're Division 3 and you're realizing your biggest problem is David, then you do need Farouk as a weapon in that battle, so you have to make peace with him. Now, that may play exactly into Farouk's hands, but it was an element that seemed like it would generate more of an interesting storyline than just a fight sequence leading to a larger fight sequence leading to a larger ultimate fight sequence.
So I guess that means that he's suggesting they had him on their side in case they needed him. Like before, I was arguing against that because you could see that their plan did not require him. As far as we saw, they captured him in that dome, but maybe they thought they would need him for whatever the next phase was, or they had him in their pocket in case they need him. And David just broke out and kind of teleported away and they didn't work out the way they planned.
Well, because who else there at Division 3 is at any psychic or mutant level than Farouk?
Right.
I mean, David is extremely powerful, and Farouk is really about the only one on his level that can defeat him. So if they're thinking that David's the big problem, then we need Farouk to help us.
Yeah.
Maybe control him if he goes ballistic here.
Well, then that, then that sort of changes my whole view that it could either be that Farouk is manipulating them all, or maybe he's not manipulating them at all.
Mm-hmm. And it's true. Just,
yeah, right.
That they did include him and make a very short piece.
All
with
him. He did was show Sydney visions of what David was really like. And we saw Carrie, who figured out how to look at a recording of what happened in the desert. And he saw David wiping Sydney's mind. And we saw somebody else find something else out. I forget what it was, but they made it so that it could just be no psychic manipulation at all, and them just discovering things about David and making them think that he's a bad guy, which I don't like that, but yeah.
So here is another item that we have from Business Insider. This is also taken from an interview with Noah Hawley. First question, season 2 leaves David in a really bad place, and some viewers might look at him as the bad guy. How do you look at good and evil in terms of this show? So Holly says, it has an echo of Fargo for me. In Fargo, there's always a moment where the person who's doing the worst things says, I'm the victim here. I feel like we have with David this idea at the end that he's a good person and deserves love. There's a certain victimization that's in his DNA, this idea that he never had a chance because this demon came into him when he was a child and his life was basically ruined before it began. He's a human being and deserves love just like anyone else, and it's that vulnerability that pushes him to make choices that are not moral on some level, because ultimately he is putting himself before Sid and before everyone else. The question becomes, to what degree can we empathize with him because of his backstory, and what point do we lose him? That moment when Sid says, you drugged me and had sex with me, where's the audience at that point? Because it's true. He wiped her memories so he could keep a relationship with her, but then, of course, her consent to anything that happened went out the window entirely. From his point of view, he loves her and needs her. It becomes very twisted, and you certainly don't see that normally in these sorts of stories. next question was, how did the last minute extra episode come to be? I know we were wondering about that as well, how that came about. Noah Hawley says, I found over the course of the season that this show doesn't want to be long. With Fargo, we were long sometimes because there's a lot of story to get across. With Legion, because of how much we're asking of the audience in terms of the fantastical nature of it and the non-linear storytelling and the surreal elements, it felt to me the more concise these episodes were, the better. So there were some elements that ended up on the cutting room floor over the course of the season. A lot of them surrounded actors Jean Smart and Jemaine Clement, who play Melanie and Oliver and that relationship and how he came in and got into her head to seduce her. She has this big turn where she goes over to the dark side, and when we had cut out all that stuff out and I watched that big turn, it just didn't mean enough. We hadn't earned it yet.
Yeah, so I don't get how that explains how we got an extra episode.
I don't think it really explained it. They cut stuff out and they pieced it back together.
Yeah, I guess. He didn't really say that, though.
He said it in another interview as well. He
says, why do we have an extra episode? Oh, because we had to cut a bunch of stuff out.
We didn't want it to be long, but we added an extra episode.
Yeah. Okay. You're fucking with us, no, Holly.
I'm okay with it. I don't mind at all. We have one more item also from Entertainment Weekly, and this was an interview with Rachel Keller, who plays Sydney. They say, you essentially played two different roles this season, present-day Sid and future Sid, and embodying future Sid, did you know the endgame? She says, the version of her in the future who knows what happens and why and how, she certainly wants to fix it. Did I know? I guess I knew that she had taken him in the orb, and I knew that she was going to try to change the past in some way. There were often times when I forgot I was playing her. It was surreal to get into the makeup and hair for her, and I often saw playing her as if I was a different actress. They asked her, when did you realize the hero of David was becoming more of a villain? She says, I wonder if I always knew that. The comic book character is so troubled and complicated. He is always the villain, so I think I was always aware we were telling the story of how he got there. One more, they say, what I've been loving is how the relationship between Sid and David has gone. He's emerged as one of the only people who can be intimate with Sid because of their own abilities, but she's also realizing he's losing his grip on reality and has to take action. In developing that relationship in season two, what were your biggest takeaways? She says, there's the duality again, what sacrifices and what it really costs someone to give up something for the better of humanity. I love stories where the center of it is a big question, someone pulled between two very diametrically opposed places, and she's certainly at the center of that question. How do I reconcile needing personal love and acceptance and also knowing, as we see in the penultimate episode, seeing things about him that she perhaps hasn't wanted to see and know before? That's it for the news.
Yeah. I guess I'm ready for a break on this. It's a bit heartbreaking.
This one really did me in. This week was a hard week. I watched Lost in Space the other day because that's the other show I'm currently podcasting on. And this latest episode was really difficult for me. And so I just watched that one, podcasted with Sean, and then had to turn around and watch Legion, and I thought, oh my gosh, I cannot emotionally take another difficult episode. Yeah. I need to watch some happy puppy videos or something.
Yeah, I'll be ready for it again in a year, but
absolutely
good place to end. Okay, let's get into some mental notes. First, from Damon C. Maxwell, he says, now we pray this is not going to be a feel-good story in the end.
Nope. Elliot Max says, not sure I like the tragic direction this is headed. Nope.
Well, then you better stop watching.
Better stop watching. This is what Noah Hawley's been warning us. It's a tragedy.
Rory Toms sent in a long email. He says, I think Sid was definitely under Farouk's thrall after last week's barrage. And I also think Fukuyama is as well. Last week, there was a scene where the Vermilion fought Farouk's Minotaur in the astral plane, and I couldn't figure out how that happened until the reveal that Fukuyama was in the desert. And I reckon that's when and how Farouk got him. And that also now makes sense that Farouk got Clark through Melanie the week before. Male Carey even wanted to give Sid a cat scan, but she refused. Just so he's saying Farouk's got his tendrils in everybody's minds. Mm-hmm. Just want to say David mind wiping Sid and taking advantage of her was a bit of a dick move, but it played right into Farouk's plan, which leads us to the confrontation. You've got Sid, Clark, and Fukuyama all under Farouk's influence, and Farouk himself all conspiring against David. Is it any wonder he wigs out and the other David show up? Yeah, I was going to mention that the other David personalities that we've heard kind of whispering got really loud as soon as Sydney shot at him.
Mm-hmm.
That's when he just got messed up and more psychologically unstable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on, and offering David therapy and drugs was never going to fly with him. And then I think back to the end of Oliver and Melanie's segment. Oliver asks, and why did he turn this David person? Melanie answers, because she showed him his future. Initially, I thought this was in reference to future Sid, but I think it's more about this scene. What scene is that?
The end scene?
Where they tell him that he's the one who destroys the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess.
He goes on, next season will be very interesting. I don't think David has lost it. I think he just realized Farouk had him beat, so he regrouped, and his only ally against Farouk, Lenny, with his only ally. So I think it'll be the two of them against Farouk in Division 3 with David trying to win back his girl. I think Melanie and Oliver are at the monastery but living in the astral plane, so not sure how they'll fit in. But who the fuck knows with Mr. Holly? Okay, my brain hurts again, so until next year, see you over at Westworld, Jason, and I will see you in Hawkins, Rima.
Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to see you in Hawkins, Rory. Thanks.
Rory, I think your story is the traditional hero story, and I am afraid that's not the story that Noah Hawley's telling, especially after these interviews that we read. I think it's going to be tragic and hard, and David being a villain. Mm-hmm. And maybe you're right that, I mean, I, as you can probably hear during the podcast, I was kind of hoping that way too. Yeah, I want Farouk to be the one that's like causing all this and David can win over him in the end. But it looks like it might just be that David is a bad guy.
I know. I don't know how he's going to come back from this.
I know. How do you come especially back after the sex thing. Yeah, like, yeah, you can't. Like, that's... come back from that. And even like if you mind wipe your partner and you don't tell them about it, then how is your relationship ever going to be good again? Because you're going to have that secret.
There's going to be trust issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you don't just give someone a psychic roofie and expect to just that trust to come back.
That's right. That's a good quote. Okay. Thank you, Rory. I hope you... yeah, I'm glad you're listening to those other podcasts. Cool.
Yeah.
We have one call this week. It's a long one, and it's a good one. I haven't listened, but it's from Laura, so that's cool. Laura Willie Swink, I'm sure it'll be great.
Love you, Laura.
We go.
Hey, Jason and Rima. I finally got caught up on Legion, and I covertly watched the finale today on my phone at work so that I could get my thoughts in on the finale. So I'm torn a little bit over these last two episodes. I love the visuals and musical choices, as always, but unlike last season, where we kind of could cheer for our heroes and admire David for his restraint with Division 3 and his decision to choose peace and negotiation over violence, we're seeing a David that is really sadistic, something we've never seen in any except for the last two episodes that I can recall. Sure, we've seen him as junkie and paranoid and obviously unstable, but never intentionally cruel. I really couldn't believe it when David was torturing Oliver, because of anyone, David should know that the Shadow King may possess someone's mind, but that body was Oliver's. I just never saw any signs of David being so callous and cruel in any of the previous episodes.
Wait, I want to pause it there, because I remember thinking in season one, especially in Division 3, when Division 3 used to be, you know, the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And when David was using his power, like in the pool, when he was using it to just flame up everything, when he burned Clark's face.
Yes.
He looked kind of into that.
He did look a little into it. He was relishing, yeah. I think. I don't know if he was relishing his power because he had just, that was like kind of right after he discovered he had it, or if he was relishing the fact he's hurting people.
Right. But whatever it was the same kind of thing, yes, that if you were his girlfriend, you might go, oh, you look like you were kind of into that, you know,
yeah.
Like, what's up with that? So that was my perception back then. I remember thinking like, ooh, he looks like there's a dark side to him there. Anyway, here's the rest.
I feel like I'm kind of in Sid's shoes right now, feeling a little betrayed by the one you love. But in my case, it's the writers. Maybe that's on purpose. I can also feel David's sense of betrayal, being judged on future crimes in a minority report sort of way. I guess I feel a little bit let down after the ending of what was my favorite episode of the season, the Multiple Universes episode, where we could see all the tragic possibilities of David Holler, and our David ends up ultimately at Clockworks, which at first seemed depressing, but turned out to be his redemption, because there he found friendship, love, and understanding and purpose. But with this finale, I feel maybe all of that was just a major misstep, and that maybe Melanie and Summerland should have left him drugged up in the psych ward. I think that's the most depressing part of this finale. some things that I did enjoy was that we get to see a representation of David's multiple personalities. Not quite the same as it is in the comic books, but you can see he's starting to develop those multiple personalities. I was really hoping for the return of British David, but didn't get that. The animated mental battle with Farouk and David was another original way to show mutant powers. I love that they're always coming up with new and inventive ways to showcase that. And I loved the Melanie and Oliver segment where we finally get to see them having a little bit of happiness living in the ice cube. Things that I didn't like were mostly things that had been set up earlier but never came to fruition. Like, I was hoping we'd find out how future Sid lost her arm. I have a feeling that'll never be revealed, or maybe will never even happen. Or Oliver telling Farouk he would kill him. We never get the explanation of what is 1 + 1. Not to mention, we've never gotten an explanation for what did the stars say from season 1. Maybe that's something we should have already figured out by now, or something that will come into play next season. But maybe Noah Hawley's just sitting sinisterly in his writer's chair laughing at all of us. I don't know. One thing that was projected that didn't happen was that David did not kill Farouk. So I'm hoping this will change future Sid's timeline. And I'm really hoping that's going to change David's current trajectory. So glad there's going to be a season 3. I hope if it's the last one that it goes out with a bang. And hopefully we'll get to see a bit of David's mother, which I don't think they've ever touched on. I want Amy to come back in some way. Maybe as David's conscience, because I truly believe that she's someone who's loved him his whole life. And I would love, love, love to see Professor X pop up to help his tortured son. I don't want to see David turn into a monster. I've had such sympathy for him for so long, and I understand those dark places he's going to have to go to. But for me, he's the son of Professor X, and I ultimately want him to find the path of peace and maybe love. I don't know. I can regularly be a cynical person, but at the core, I'm really a romantic, and I want to see a happy ending for David Holler. Great podcast, guys. You did an awesome season, and hopefully we'll see you again next year with Legion.
I think you will, if it comes back.
I hope so. Well, they said that they're coming back in November to start filming.
Oh,
production starts. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. They get a little bit of a break.
Yeah, I feel like the best way to go with this show, Laura, is to expect a tragedy. And then if anything else happens, you'll be pleasantly surprised, or at least be ready for it.
I feel like...
Unless you just don't want to watch it, if that's the case, then maybe just don't watch it, and then you'll find out whether you should watch it after it's all over, and then you can binge it.
No, that's unacceptable. Of course we're going to watch it, no matter what happens. I feel like if I can live through these last few episodes, because I'm with you, Laura, I felt this betrayal. I felt the betrayal on Sid's side. I felt the betrayal on David's side.
Yeah.
And everything that happened. So I feel betrayed as well and completely heartbroken. I feel like I need to sit with someone and just kind of cry over this. I'm not a big crier, but sometimes I just feel better if I could just cry about this and just move on and feel good about it.
I'm just saying, if you need this show to have a happy ending, then you might be sorely disappointed. It looks like it's not heading in that direction.
I don't think it's going to be. I mean, that's what we want, but I don't think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah. Like with Breaking Bad, I was ready for the worst, you know, and I enjoyed every minute of it. But I feel the same way. You can tell in my voice, like, I like David, and I want him to be the hero and have everything work out. And maybe he'll just have to go through a lot of hell first, and then he will find some peace. But I think there's a very good chance that he'll just destroy the world in the finale or something, you know, like you never know. She mentioned future Sid's arm. I don't know. I feel like still there's this specter of David potentially destroying the world hanging over the show. And I think they'll maybe still explore that. So maybe we'll still get to see future Sid's arm. Maybe Sid will lose her arm.
Maybe. And we saw in the penultimate episode, whether or not it was a possibility of what could happen, or was it a future glimpse of what could happen when we saw David like the Legion from the comics, David.
Right.
Yeah. With his hair that spiked just sort of and
stuck that in there.
Exactly. Didn't... So it's like, yeah, I feel like they don't show this stuff without a purpose. So could it lead to that? You know, we don't know.
She mentioned stars from the first season. I don't remember that.
I don't remember the scene exactly. What episode? When she. I think it was David and Sydney, I thought, were having a conversation, and one of them asked the other, what did the stars say? It's been a little while.
Okay.
A lot has happened.
We don't know what they said.
I do remember that, but I think there's a couple things that, we're not going to exactly get a lot of answers on, and that they kind of throw out there like the cow.
The green hands.
I think that, well, he did talk about that in an interview. I didn't add that in the notes, and I'll be
Well, don't say what it is, because we're going to have to tune in next year to find out.
Right, the big reveal for the green hands. Stay tuned for season 3.
I'm just kidding. Did he say what it was? What was it?
Well, they were talking about, you know, in the last episode, the big bath plug. You know, he was talking about how this was something that he modeled after, and I can't remember exactly because I read a lot of news and stuff on this episode, so I can't tell you verbatim. But he was talking about that and how it was kind of how he kind of modeled this after. Something else that he was influenced by taking these everyday items and making them kind of big and oversized. Right. And he did that with this bath plug. He did it with those hands. Mm. So it kind of was like, his purpose was kind of making you look at them in a different kind of way. These everyday things
but
that you
he
see
didn't really
in a different kind of way.
It
he doesn't explain it. No, it's more visual. Yeah. It doesn't really have a purpose or an explanation. It's just making you look at everyday things in a different kind of way.
Hmm.
So, there goes my green hands. I didn't really have a theory for that, but I noticed. I'm going, what the hell's up with these green hands? And then I'm like, what the hell's up with this cow? I don't think we're ever going to know what's up with the cow either. And that's okay.
All right. That is our show for the season, episode 19. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks.
Hope you enjoyed it. Want to mention again, you can find our other shows at podcastica.com. That's podcastica.com. And if you want to get in on that Patreon, it's patreon.com/JasonandKaren.
Come join the fun.
Yep. All right. Sayonara.
See ya.
Bye. Stay sane, everybody.
Side.
All right.
Are you a good person?
Shut up.
Are you a good person?
Shut up.
Are you a good person?
Shut up!